Rourke Denver is a Navy SEAL. Was an active duty Navy SEAL for 14 years, and for the last 4 years has been training other Navy SEALs to do that job. He has been on the job in Latin America. He has worked against violent mobs in Liberia. He has certainly been part of our two wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. He has led some 200 commando missions. And he writes about his life and about what it's like to teach other guys how to do what he did in a great new book called Damn Few, Making the Modern SEAL Warrior. Rourke, welcome to the Big 550 KTRS.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You are the former head of basic and advanced SEAL training. I should also mention that you were also in a movie called Act of Valor. But there are so many stories in here, and I'd like to ask you about one that's right at the front of the book.
Sure.
It's a story about you and other SEALs showing up at a base in Afghanistan that's being pelted by enemy sniper fire. And I guess they called in the SEALs to help. And the way that you went about helping was essentially making yourselves the targets to draw out the enemy. Can you share some of that story with my audience?
Yeah, you know, the thing that's exciting about being a SEAL is that we don't operate with a regular playbook. We really throw out a lot of the conventional, you know, methods of prosecuting a war or an enemy, so we get to get creative. And that scene was actually in Iraq, and we were in a Marine kind of controlled base, and we were taking tremendous amounts of mortar and sniper fire, and we realized that conventional special operations missions were launched at night, you know, night vision, going out and doing these raids. The bad guys just weren't there at night, so we kind of realized this is going to be a daytime, daylight affair. And we recognized pretty quickly that finding them in their own populace was so challenging that we had to just basically become bait. We had to get out into the populace and onto the streets and figure out a way to pull them into the fight and then win those fights as they arose.
So by doing so, you're really making yourselves the targets, and then the Marines and the SEALs work together to combat the enemy, right?
Exactly right. It's a huge partnership, and we had the capacity and some of the training to move and kind of communicate and engage the enemy outside of the confines of the base, and then we'd have Marines supporting and even Iraqi units, their military units there to kind of support and engage the enemy. So it was a very creative and dangerous at the time, but it felt like the only way we could get at the enemy.
So here's what I'm curious about. When you're put into a mission, when a SEAL team is sent in on a mission like that, does somebody say, you guys go in there and figure out what needs to be done and do it? Or do they say to you, here's what we want you to do, A, B, C, D?
Usually it's this is the requirement. This is what we, you know, this is the goal or the objective or what we need to achieve, and they let us come up with a way to achieve that end state. Sometimes there are predicted tactics and things that we need to use, but I write about in the book, there's a lot of things we take to the battlefield and solving problems and a way we kind of generate and create very creative teams to be able to match that need is what's special and unique about our brotherhood.
Yeah, that is the special thing that sticks out to me from reading about your adventures and the training of the other people, is you're called upon so often to create your own plan.
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, we prefer that. That's the great thing. I think our guys thrive off coming up with a way to do things differently and looking at problem sets through a different lens. And I think that's why senior leadership in this country has been asking our unit, amongst others, and there's all sorts of units, special operations and conventional, that can effectively conduct high-profile missions. I just think the senior leadership all the way up to the commander-in-chief has said there's something unique going on there. There's some ability to solve problems on the battlefield that we haven't seen in other units, and let's task these guys to the job.
Well, then the next logical question for me is, why aren't we training everybody in the military to think like that and do that and act like you guys? I mean, I was stunned to read in your book that there are only 2,500 Navy SEALs.
Why? And that may be the answer. I mean, I would like to say that that everybody could do it, but it seems the statistics don't bear that out. You know, I write a lot about basic training in Damn Few and our SEAL training program, and about 75% of the guys that start that course of instruction don't make it. So you've got this very, very special, kind of grist that goes into the mill. You know, we've got very talented and sometimes challenging guys that come into the unit, and then we allow them to think for themselves. We have very disciplined ways of building the skill sets, but then getting on the battlefield, it allows for a very, very creative team, a wild team of guys that are capable of doing things that a lot of units aren't. And I think that becomes the big question. Can you mass produce these guys? And I argue a little bit in the book that you can't, that it's a very small number of folks that kind of fit into that mold of warrior, and when you get them, it's special, but it is limited.
But we are relying more on SEALs and other special forces now during these wars in Iraq and Afghanistan than we ever have, right?
Absolutely. I mean, we're getting calls and more participation than we've ever had. And this never can be forgot that it's on the backs of conventional forces as well. I mean, it really is one team and one fight out there. And when I say this, I can't tell you how sincerely I mean it. It doesn't matter if you're a cook, mechanic, intel, pilot, operator, whatever it is, everyone gets that job done together. And if everyone wasn't doing their piece of the job, we wouldn't be able to get it done. I think our missions get the profile and the big news hits, but it takes everybody.
This is the Big 550 KTRS. I'm Paul Harris talking with Rourke Denver, who is a former head of basic and advanced SEAL training, 14 years himself as a Navy SEAL, writes about that life and what it's like to train other SEALs in a new book called Damn Few, Making the Modern SEAL Warrior. How were you chosen?
That's the best thing, I think, as well about our community is no one's chosen. It's an all-volunteer force. So everyone that comes to the SEAL teams does so of their own, desire and their own, seeking out of this brotherhood. So I was in my senior year of college back in upstate New York at Syracuse, and I was reading Winston Churchill at the time. And I read one of his autobiographies, and I knew I wanted to serve in the military. And then from there, I wanted to be with an elite unit. So I sought out the SEALs, as a lot of young men do.
And when you went in there, did you know anybody who had done that before? I mean, when you said you sought this out, was it because somebody had told you about that life?
I think I'd heard enough about it. I mean, it certainly wasn't in the news or in the media the way it is now. So it was very much still in the shadows. And so I had heard about this small unit of guys that trained in Southern California, that 80% of the guys that went there didn't make it through, and they come out of the water and blow things up and shoot and run these clandestine missions. And that just sounded exciting to me. So I didn't have a lot of ability to research it, but I write one story in Damn Few about a funny senior SEAL that I got on the phone who gave me a pretty hard time about the fact that I certainly wouldn't make it through the training and had a chance to prove him wrong.
I want to read a paragraph from Damn Few here, because I want to talk about a little bit about SEAL Team 6 and Osama bin Laden,
sure,
which is how more people found out about SEALs than anything else, I think, in the history of Special Forces. But here's just a little bit about what it's like to be in the situation that those guys were, and which you were many, many times in all the missions that you fought.
Sure.
It says, "You don't know the language. The culture is impossible to crack. The good guys and the bad guys are hard to tell apart. That's the warrior business day in and day out. As the officer on the team, you need to be a warrior, but you need to be a diplomat. You need to be a lawyer. You need to be a priest and a parent." That, to me, that is the best description of the job I've ever read, Rourke.
Oh, I really appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, I think that ends up becoming the magic to it. It is the officers, and that's another thing that's unique about Damn Few. I've been an officer my entire time in the Navy and in the SEAL teams, and most of the recent high-profile books that have come out have been from the enlisted perspective, and it's not better or worse, it's just different. So I have the tactical up through the executive and strategic view on the way we do things, and I think that description of those different requirements of a leader and of a SEAL to have all those facets, a politician and a parent when you've got to take care of your guys, and knowing the diplomacy and the impact that your operations can have on both the culture you're immersed in and your country's reputation are staggeringly intense and important. So you are aware of that when you're doing that job, and you want nothing more than to succeed and not let down your brotherhood and your country.
What did you think of the way SEALs were portrayed in Zero Dark Thirty?
I thought they did a good job. I think it's very, very hard to do it you know, exactly right. It's such a wild and different group of guys and creative and charismatic and tough, and it's hard to just capture. I think the strength of Zero Dark Thirty, and I enjoyed the movie. I can detach myself from the tactical side of it and just enjoy a film, was that it really paid credit to the folks that actually did kill Bin Laden, the CIA operators that did not let it go, and Intel pros that didn't let it go for over a decade. I mean, yep. The fact of the matter is, you tell us, you know, bad guy X is at this location. He is there right now. Go get him. That is what we do. We're not going to fail at that mission. It's the finding, and it took over a decade. So I think it really paid respect to the folks that deserve the credit.
Yeah. The great thing about that movie is exactly that. It's a detective story with great work by the SEALs at the end, but that detective story is what led them to have to do that mission.
100%. Once that mission is queued up and set and we know the target is fixed and he's right there, the final part of that is kind of a layup for us. I know that sounds, I'm not trying to belittle it or make it sound any less challenging, but it really is what we do. It's all the work that leads up to finding and fixing that target so we can go do what we do.
So I mentioned that before getting Bin Laden, Navy SEALs were kind of a secret thing. I mean, for most people, their exposure to Navy SEALs was Steven Seagal in Under Siege.
Right.
I mean, that was it. So it seemed like maybe even that there was like a secret brotherhood where you guys may have talked about the job to each other, but to the rest of the world, it was shush, none of their business. Now, of course, we've got that movie. We had your movie, Act of Valor. We've got you writing this book. We have other members of SEAL Team 6 who wrote about that. Does the SEAL community like all this publicity?
I think it's a mixed bag. I mean, I think there's guys that if it's done right and it's from the right guy, they're fine with it. And I think there's guys that you know, will just object no matter what. I think part of the problem is you can't put Pandora back in the box, right? I mean, it the first of these big missions that were leaked, you know, from the Somali pirate rescue to the Bin Laden raid, you know, those weren't leaked by SEALs. It was leaked and kind of thrown on the front pages by, you know, some of the most senior leaders in government, and maybe they were politicizing some of those for their own benefit. I'm not going to get into the arguments when it comes to that. That really launched us into a light that we've never experienced before. And then amidst that, you have a lot of other, you know, books and movies and things like that. And so I feel clean in my experience in that the movie that I participated in was on Navy orders. I was on active duty, and they put me on a regular Navy set of orders to go support the movie Act of Valor. And I thought we brought a very real and authentic view into what we did. And then with my book, I sent it to the Pentagon. I wanted to make sure it was scrubbed. There wouldn't be any secret information in there. It came back clean, and so I moved forward. So I think it really depends on how you do it and who's doing it, and that's where people break out on whether they're for or against it.
It's the Big 550 KTRS. Paul Harris talking with Rourke Denver, former Navy SEAL, former current trainer of Navy SEALs, and author of a great book called Damn Few, Making the Modern SEAL Warrior. When you go into a situation, do you like to be in an urban environment or a rural environment?
I enjoy them both. They both have their, you know, individual and specific challenges and advantages, and so it's hard to pinpoint one. I mean, the urban environment is very challenging in that you usually have a much tougher time distinguishing between enemy combatants and civilians, and there's usually just a higher concentration of folks, so you have a little bit more to worry about in that environment. And then in the, you know, the more rural places, then it becomes, you know, are we in the right place? Are we getting to the right target set? And is this the bad guy we're looking for? And it becomes, sometimes more physical depending on the terrain. I mean, when you're running up a 10,000 foot goat trail in Afghanistan, that becomes a huge physical challenge compared to walking at sea level through a town. So they have their own plus and minus. I like them both.
Were there times, particularly in Afghanistan, where you were doing the job and you knew you and the other SEALs and whoever else from the military, whichever branch you were serving with that day, you knew that you could do the job, but you wondered to yourself, why are we doing this job?
Yeah, it's hard not to say. I mean, I think the nice thing for a warrior is I think you're a little bit unburdened by that. If you're doing your job right, you are, you know, not following orders indiscriminately, but you are in the, you know, the decision set and in the chop chain to execute the missions that are coming down from higher authority, and you do those missions to the best of your ability. So you can, you know, kind of, disconnect yourself from some of that. I do think in reflection and I love history. I love to read. And so, you know, knowing that Alexander and his Macedonians walked across those same canyons and, you know, they may have won a few of the battles, but they certainly never took over that part of the world. You just have a sense that it may never be in any way, you know, pacified, not the right word, but, you know, that's the graveyard of empires. No one's really done it right, and there's a lot of historical lessons to know that it's hard to do right. So, yeah, there's times when you scratch your head a bit, but you do your job, and you do it to the best of your ability.
And then how was your transition home from that environment?
You know, for me, I was always in balance with it. I think I believe, and I kind of wrote about it in the book, that I was born a warrior, and that, you know, then 25 years later becoming a SEAL kind of confirmed that was the right place for me to work. And I've always had, I think, a good emotional balance between doing the job against our enemies and coming home and being in balance with my family and my loved ones and kind of my regular life here. And I think as a community, we're taking that very seriously now, a decade plus of sustained combat. How do we bring guys back and settle them into the fold? And I think that'll be an ongoing process and something I want to participate in, to try and make sure, you know, guys are well taken care of and kind of prepared for coming off the high adrenaline and intense life of being in sustained combat.
Yeah, one of the things that I think this country should hang its head in shame over is the way we are not taking care of our returning veterans, SEALs, and others. We've got far too many guys who are coming home with PTSD and traumatic brain disorder and just finding it impossible to change from multiple tours in that environment to living in our environment. It's very different when, you know, you wake up in the morning and all you got to do is really go down to the strip mall and pick up a few things at the supermarket, and that life is so different. Have you had buddies who had difficulty making the transition?
I have. You know, a few. I think our numbers are surprisingly so, and I think that's subject to the fact that that our guys are so focused and desire that intense level of combat. I mean, our guys are seeking that out to come to the SEAL. I mean, you're not coming to the SEAL teams to run a medical check or build a bridge or things like that. We're going after targets, and that's, I think, going in, you're kind of forearmed and forewarned and ready for it. So I think in the aftermath, you're more prepared to deal with it. But I have had a few. I've had a few that have had challenges, and we've got them the help. And our community is so small that we're pretty quick, I think, to you know, offer that help or just tell a buddy, hey, you know, you can go talk to the doc. It's confidential. You're not going to lose your security clearance. You can still keep doing the job, and it may help you clear through some things you need to clear through. But you're absolutely right. If we don't have that landing pad well set and kind of sustained support for our troops, we're going to have some horrible, horrible results.
Absolutely.
Horrible results.
And the VA really needs to fix it. Guys who are waiting a year for basic services, it's a horrible, horrible problem that needs to be fixed. Rourke, I love talking to you, and I really, really enjoyed the book. And congratulations on that, and thank you so much for your service, most of all.
The honors are to serve. I really appreciate the time. I enjoyed it as well.
My pleasure. The book is called Damn Few, Making the Modern SEAL Warrior. Rourke Denver here with Paul Harris on the Big 550 KTRS.